coming up on Thunder Pop.
This is the 103rd episode of the Thunder Pop podcast. I'm Stephen Presley, and I'm joined across the way from me by Johnny Lightfoot.
Hello, hello.
Way too long since you've been here, and I was trying to think when the last time I saw you was.
It's May the 4th.
May the 4th day. Star Wars, which seems like it was just the other day, but it's been you know, already a couple months,
as we're
in July. And this is 4th of July weekend, so happy Independence Day to you, Johnny Lightfoot.
Happy Independence Day.
And on this Independence Day, we're going to talk about the independence of Peter Parker and
yes.
what he wanted to have was independence and Far From Home, and he wanted to break free from all the responsibilities of being Spider-Man. And so it's our reaction show, of course, to Spider-Man Far From Home in this episode. We're going to open the show with reviewing the trailer. And our review in the trailer this week is Knives Out, the new Rian Johnson film.
Yep.
Knives Out, which is a whodunit.
Yes.
Murder mystery, which seems to be a hot thing right now.
It is. I mean, even Netflix with the latest Adam Sandler movie was a whodunit.
And that was a bit of a hit.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't. Compared to his last couple Netflix movies, I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I actually watched it. We gave it a watch the weekend. A lot of people gave it a watch, apparently, because it had a huge weekend for Netflix in terms of volume of watches. At least it's what's been reported. And I don't think Netflix even gives out their exact numbers,
do they?
So I don't know how that was found out, that it was such a big hit. But I guess they at least acknowledged that it was a hit.
Right.
So maybe that's so they could justify, if they re-up Adam Sandler,
right,
they can justify it by saying, well, he made this kind of neat film with Jennifer Aniston. So, and that seems to be a good comedy team up, him and Jennifer Aniston. So yeah, that was a digestible offering.
And I mean, recently last year we had The Murder on the Orient Express.
Exactly.
Which was pretty good. Big cast there.
Daisy Ridley.
Mm-hmm.
Who we're going to talk about in a little bit, because I got an agree or disagree question related to her.
Yeah, and then they're doing a sequel to that. So
really?
Yeah.
Did not. Well, kind of breaking news here for me.
So
breaking news up in this place.
So yeah, it's a big thing. It's coming back. They're finding they can make these kind of movies relatively inexpensive outside of the cast. You pay for a big ensemble cast.
You get a big ensemble cast, but you don't have, not everybody has to be A-list in the cast. You could get kind of that, well, A-minus at least, maybe a few B's in there. In the case of this one, we're gonna do a review on the trailer, Knives Out. You've got some names like Don Johnson in there.
Yeah.
Who's not necessarily an A-list, but he's known, especially with a 80s pop culture audience for Miami Vice. But, you know, also his daughter being an actress and being known as well. So that's kind of, and Chris Evans, who again, not necessarily an A-lister on the level of a Brad Pitt or Tom Cruise, but he's very well known because of the Marvel, you know, Marvel movies.
People know who he is, and Jamie Lee Curtis. Toni Collette just did well with Hereditary last year. So,
and Daniel Craig, I mean, everybody's got a lot of respect for Daniel Craig. So it there's a strategic casting.
Yes.
Yeah, you're not going out and get a bunch of also-rans that people are going to laugh at when they see the cast list. But they're people, not necessarily they're going to cost you a bundle to put in one film.
But they're known.
They're known. But they're still known and they're respectable. And then thrown in a movie together, it could be a nice fun bit of casting. So we're going to do that, reviewing the trailer, reaction to Spider-Man Far From Home, our usual agree or disagree, and thoughts and advice.
Very cool.
On this 103rd episode, and our episodes now kind of match the temperature of Austin summer, so that's kind of where we're at. Right after this.
Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud, he's got radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look overhead. Hey there goes the Spider-Man.
Thunder Pop. It's time for Thunder Pop. Okay, I lied.
Yeah. Here it is, Friday after July 4th that we're recording this episode. And this movie, Knives Out. Now, this is the Rian Johnson, his first feature since Last Jedi, right?
Yeah, his follow-up to the divisive Last Jedi.
To the most divisive film of since, I don't know what, the Mel Gibson Jesus movie maybe was the one that was more divisive as that. So yeah, Rian Johnson became a very polarizing figure in on the internet with Star Wars fans, and you either love him or you hate him.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably no in betweens. And he was even a little bit on some people's lists as a controversial choice even before they saw Last Jedi, for people that maybe weren't as crazy about Looper, and that they based his resume just on that. Would have been like, oh, I'm still not sure about him even going into it before they came out with Last Jedi. But now this movie comes out, Knives Out. It's a 2019 movie. It's going to come out later in the year. It's a whodunit, so it's a very different type of movie. This movie, would you say it's really important to him right now?
I would say so, because these type of movies, these a little more grounded in the sense of, you know, less budget, less... you know, social media, yeah. Less people always just looking into every little detail that you're doing. And above all else, he's a storyteller. Mm-hmm. So he wants to tell a good story.
Yeah, absolutely. No matter what the genre is. Mm-hmm. Do you think this film, if it's really, really good, can flip the script for him a little bit?
Well, I mean, I think so, because even as of today, his whole dealings with, you know, is he or isn't he getting his own Star Wars sort of thing, I mean, it's still up in the air. But if this is a big hit, then you never really know.
Yeah. Now, what if it's a big dud critically and box office?
Oh, man.
Is that devastating for him?
I think so. But the thing with Rian Johnson is, say what you will about Last Jedi, critically well-received, as were his other two larger releases, Looper and Brick. So critically, he's always done well with the critics,
yeah.
Just not necessarily with the audience.
Yeah. Here he is, directing Knives Out.
And I eliminated no suspects. I suspect foul play. And I eliminated no suspects.
I'm Detective Lieutenant Elliot, and this is Trooper Wagner. We just want to ask a few questions. We understand the night of his demise, the family have gathered to celebrate your father's 85th birthday.
So already you got Jamie Lee Curtis. You can't go wrong with her.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Michael Shannon.
Mm-hmm.
Another like home run for them in the casting. Now, Don Johnson, one of the best things that's happened to Don Johnson in recent years is that he's getting older.
Mm-hmm.
So he, for years, he was, I think he was sort of typecast and stuck in that Sonny Crockett, Miami Vice.
Yeah.
Because he still looked for a long time like Sonny Crockett from Miami Vice. Now he's gotten a little bit older. He's got the facial hair. He's got a little bit more, you know, not just stubble. He's got a full beard. He's got a little bit of gray in his hair. And he's done a few actually pretty respectable roles since Miami Vice. That's also kind of helped separate him from, I mean, he's had a few series that were on TV that were short-lived, but still had some critical acclaim, nothing mm-hmm. that he was laughed at for doing, but just didn't get the audience. But then he's been in a couple of other movies since then that's done really well. I mean, even not too far separated from Miami Vice, Tin Cup didn't do too bad
right.
with movie audiences and in sales of tickets, but also in critical reaction as well. So Don Johnson seems to be getting a little bit of love now from casting. Also, he was in one of the Robert Rodriguez films a few years ago. I think, was it the sequel to Mariachi or the original Mariachi?
No, it was Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
Yeah, maybe it was Once Upon a Time. I know he was in one of the he got some good reviews for his work in the Rodriguez film. So that's another one. So there you got him as well.
How was it?
The party. My dad's death. Oh, it was great.
Love the sarcasm.
Love that shot.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to request that you all stay until the investigation is completed.
What? Can we ask why? Has something changed?
No.
No, it hasn't changed, or no, we can't ask.
I'm gonna live till I die.
You think one of his family,
Walls, killed? Is that what you're suggesting?
I'm gonna take the
You all love twisting the knife into one another.
Up your ass.
Oh, very nice.
Matter of fact,
oh my God.
Eat shit. How's that? Nice. Eat shit. Yes. Eat shit. Slap eat shit.
That smug smile.
Definitely eat shit.
Gonna dance. Gonna fly. I'm taking chance. My heart. Oh. My numbers up. I'm gonna fill my cup. I'm gonna live.
You know something. Spill it.
I suspect foul play. And I have eliminated no suspects.
I'm gonna live until I...
It's a twisted web. We are not finished untangling it, not yet.
What is this? CSI KFC?
Until I die.
Kind of a comedic turn there for Chris Evans. Mm-hmm. He seems to be the wise ass kind of comedic relief in this.
Right. They, you have him as the pompous one. And then obviously it's a wealthy family. And so you have to kind of pepper in there all these different people.
The personalities. Yeah. Different types.
And I'm kind of interested in who, because Ana de Armas is in there. Yeah. We haven't seen her since Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah.
She has that very thick Spanish accent, so I'm wondering who she's playing. I know she's only gotten better over the years acting-wise, but it's kind of interesting for her to be in this.
How they'll use her. Yeah, is she married, like a married to one of the rich family members somehow, or is she going to keep her accent, or is she going to do something different? Yeah, it'll be interesting. And then two of the best actors, I think, working today with Christopher Plummer and Michael Shannon.
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, those two alone just bring you that extra gravitas to the film, that more serious flavor, whereas, you know, with Chris Evans, you have a little bit of that humor. Even Jamie Lee Curtis, a little bit in the beginning, kind of little offhand humor.
She's really capable of going back and forth from a very serious dramatic and then going into some very funny sarcasm where it's needed, going kind of back and forth. I think Jamie Lee Curtis, had she been a young actor today, and not taking anything away from what she's done on her resume, her body of work, it's very respectable. But if she had been a young, just starting out actress today, I think she would have been in line for a lot more meatier roles that are now that females are finally starting to get. It's still a long way coming for, I mean, there's still a lot of progress to be achieved. So that is true. But then they're at this point, there's just much more offerings for female leads.
Well, yeah. And then also, I mean, I think she almost suffered a little bit similar to Carrie Fisher in that they both were daughters of, you know, Hollywood royalty.
True. That's a good point. So and that so worked against her, too.
You kind of had that stigma over you.
It works for you.
Until it doesn't.
Until it doesn't. Yeah.
Because that's the other thing. I think early in their careers, I don't know how much they really worked at their acting craft necessarily because they were just being given these roles.
Can you just coast along on your name and you're going to get a few roles just on that to start off? And so how much were you really? Yeah, Carrie Fisher, definitely not on the level of Jamie Lee Curtis. And rest in peace to Carrie Fisher. We love Carrie Fisher, but she was not on the same level as a thespian level of Jamie Lee Curtis, but still much better actress, I think, in her
early years, definitely.
Yeah, than her early years. Yeah, so that's true. Liza Minnelli would be another one, following in the footsteps of Judy Garland. She certainly probably helped her get, a few acting jobs in the beginning, but then being able to get, you know.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of another one, Don Johnson's kid, we mentioned Dakota Johnson.
Dakota Johnson.
Kind of making a name for herself away from her dad, kind of doing her own thing.
And her mom, Melanie Griffith. Yeah. So she's got the double whammy because she's got both parents. One of the actors from that era, his son has the same name. So he was like Humphrey Bogart Jr. I would have to look it up, but I don't want to speak out of place. So it was not, maybe it wasn't Humphrey Bogart. It was somebody though, fairly well known from that era of movies, had a son. They were a junior, had the same name. He was hosting the Cheaters show.
Oh, wow.
And then died recently.
Oh, wow.
And it was some foul play involved in the death. Maybe drugs were involved or something, but he was hosting the show's produced up in Dallas. So he was living up in Dallas, producing the show. And then just a few months ago, was found dead. Now it's driving me crazy. It wasn't Humphrey Bogart. Maybe it was, Clark Gable, Clark Gable Jr. So the worst thing I think you can do, and rest in peace to Clark Gable. It was Clark Gable
the third.
He was the host of the Cheaters show, the most recent host of the Cheaters show. But I mean, I think the worst thing the famous person can do is give their name to their kid.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's a Michael Jordan Jr. I think Michael Jordan named one of his sons Michael Jordan Jr.
I believe so.
Yeah. And they played basketball, both the Jordans, for a while.
Well, and there's a couple of, there's Vladimir Guerrero Jr. baseball.
Yeah.
There's Fernando Tatis Jr. Both of them are just now, like, they're in their rookie seasons. But still, yeah, it's tough. I mean, even Wyatt Russell, Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn's son is finally starting to get out from under his dad's shadow.
Yeah, he looks a lot like his dad, doesn't he?
He looks and sounds a lot like him.
I mean, they definitely could use him, and if they've not already, I don't know if they've used him in a movie playing the younger version of his dad in it, like a flashback or something, but they definitely could get away with it. So sometimes it works out okay, like in the case of Ken Griffey in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he probably even exceeded his dad.
Yeah, he definitely surpassed his father.
In what he did, yeah, in the baseball world. So sometimes it, actually, in that case, it worked out. But I don't know. Just in other cases, you know, it's like, well, what a tough act to follow now. I've got to use the name while I'm trying to also, like, get out of their shadow. So this film, are you excited?
I am. It was on my top 20 most anticipated of the year, going into the year. Once it got its release date, a lot of speculation in some of my Fantastic forums that this could be a closing night film for Fantastic Fest, which would be end of September. So it'd be about, you know, a month and a half early. So fingers crossed for that. That'd be nice because Rian Johnson has come to Fantastic Fest in the past. So that'd be really cool.
That could be cool. That would be a big, so there's going to be a little bit of buzz anticipation of that possibility happening. Mm-hmm. Maybe another Jamie, because Jamie Lee Curtis was just at
last year's.
So it could be interesting.
She's been here. Yeah.
She might make a back-to-back appearance if they bring a couple of people from the cast with them. She might be one of the people. She might, if she enjoyed her visit last year.
Which, I mean, most actors that have come always enjoy it because they don't get bugged like they do at other festivals. Mm-hmm. They do their carpet, and then they go just party and do everything like everybody else.
Austin has a little bit of that. I hear there's a rule, like New York has an unspoken rule about not bugging famous people and letting them kind of go about their day because there's famous people on the street all over the place. And so Austin has a little bit of that too.
Yeah, it's not even not bugging, but it's just treating everybody like you're just another person. It looks like, hey, I really enjoyed that film. Mm-hmm. Cheers. And then that's it.
Speaking of that, you know, I just saw the movie we were about to talk about. We could talk to it.
Yeah.
I guess that's been done.
I don't
know
if it talked back, but
Shia LaBeouf, I think, did that. Didn't he talk to his movies?
He talked to all of his movies.
He talked to all of his movies, so it's not out of the question. I may have an idea now for a new podcast bit. But the as I went to the Alamo Drafthouse Mueller, to my first time at that location, and I found it's really actually pretty easy to get to from here. But I was at the Alamo Drafthouse Mueller to see Far From Home on the 4th of July. I'm not certain, but I'm pretty sure I think I saw Anthony Carrigan. Mm-hmm. At the movie theater with a group of people, and I was like, it was driving me crazy. I wanted to ask, hey, are you Anthony? But it was kind of awkward, so I didn't ask. But I did follow the group around a little bit, like trying to not. I was on my phone, like, because they went to a pub, and then, you know, anybody that's been to the Mueller, I wasn't literally stalking, but there's like a lick ice cream. There's a bunch of stuff near the theater, so you can kind of walk around. So I wasn't like totally stalking him.
This is very, very bad.
But I made it look like I was just going to lick ice cream just so I could get another look, and I was looking at my phone, like pictures of him, because it was driving me crazy. And he's going to be in the new Bill and Ted's. He's the villain in Bill and Ted's 3. Okay. That was just announced. So I was actually Googling today, trying to figure out what would he be in town for. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't find anything. So maybe Anthony Kerrigan was at the Alamo Drafthouse last night. He was watching Spider-Man Far From Home, by the way. He might have been at the pub celebrating just getting cast in Bill and Ted's 3.
Thunderpop, in association with D's Nuts Productions. Got 'em.
So Spider-Man Far From Home. This is our first helping of After the Endgame.
Right.
And I didn't know this, but this film, not Endgame, is actually the end of this current phase of Marvel.
Right, yeah. A lot of people didn't know that. And in my review on Letterboxd, I explained, like, it was a nice epilogue to this phase of the MCU. Because that's how I saw it. It was definitely an epilogue to Endgame.
That's what it turned out to be. And so, I thought... I assume, like, the larger audience assumed that Endgame was the end of the Phase 3 of Marvel, but it was actually this film was the end. So I don't know what would be the beginning of Phase 4.
They haven't announced it. So I don't know if you've noticed, but Sony and Warner, DC, they all pulled out of San Diego Comic-Con Hall H this year.
Wow.
Which is happening in, like, 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, real close.
But they all pulled out because Sony, Marvel's going to be there.
Sony and DC.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Marvel's going to be there, but they pulled out. Well, why would that make them want to pull out of it?
So, in the last, like, year or two, Marvel has not gone to Comic-Con.
Okay.
They've just done their own thing at Disney D23. But this year, because it's going to be, they're going to show off what's coming up in Phase 4.
Yeah.
They're pretty much going to own Hall H. So
it's too big for them to compete just with that.
Like, yeah, no point. Why spend a bunch of money
on promoting, you know, things that people are already going to go see, which I would assume would have been Wonder Woman,
The Batman.
Yeah. Things that people are already going to go see. They're going to go see him anyway. They're going to get the audience that they're going to get. They don't have to spend a bunch of money in promotion and then it's just like, they also don't want that side by side. Like everybody is excited about going to Phase 4 to see what that's going to be like. And then getting kind of looked like embarrassed by the less interest they may get,
right?
You know, in the initial, you know, viewings they may get at the Comic-Con, so that makes sense. And then what about for Lucas Star Wars?
So my understanding is they're not going to do hardly anything there.
Yeah, so kind of same deal. Well, same thing. They've got what they have coming up. I think it's going to get the audience it's going to get without going there.
Oh yeah, I mean they sold out their Star Wars Celebration tickets for next August within like a day.
Yeah. So in a way, it kind of, you know, when you think about it, it kind of makes sense for Marvel to decide they're going to go for that now, because they had no trouble getting people to go to Infinity War and Endgame. Mm-hmm. They didn't need to put
they're going into a new territory with, you know, casualties that happened, you know, in this phase. So,
and there are some people kind of worried. There's some apprehension about Phase 4.
What are you going to do without your heavy hitters?
Yeah, people are saying, oh, this is going to be the B team. This is not going to be the A team. Is this going to be as good as, you know, is this going to be good Marvel that we're going to get in Phase 4 without the, you know, Robert Downey Jr. And Chris Evans being a part of it? So there's that. So, and so what about with the mutants, the new mutants?
So that movie has had so many issues that I honestly wouldn't be surprised if they end up just dropping it on the streaming service.
Really? Wow. So it may...
And that signify the definitive end of the Fox X-Men universe.
Okay. Yeah. And it seems like on the tail end, those movies have had some trouble.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of, was it Dark Phoenix?
Dark Phoenix did horrible.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they did their best to market it as this is the end of the X-Men.
Right, which was a huge everything. Series.
Mm-hmm.
The X-Men's been huge.
But to be honest, I didn't even go watch it just because, and I see everything. I didn't go watch it.
A lot of people didn't go watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What happened there at the end? Do you think they were kind of like phoning it in
because they knew they weren't going to make any more.
Yeah.
Kevin Feige has said no plans to introduce X-Men into the MCU for another couple years.
And they shouldn't.
Yeah.
It'd be too soon to try to, especially if they're going to mostly just do new, like redoing some of these characters.
Yeah, they want to let that stink die down.
Of the stuff that was done at the end that was sort of, ugh.
Yeah, they want that to go away because you don't want to bring in these properties that people fresh in their mind are still thinking, oh, that was bad. Mm-hmm. Why would you want to introduce this to your universe that has, for the most part, garnered, you know, positive stuff all around?
Yeah, for the most part, it's been really good, really strong. So one of the things I noticed, and now we can get back to what may be happening in Phase 4, but getting into the actual Far From Home and the end of Phase 3. And by the way, from this point on, spoilers all the way. So if you have not seen Spider-Man Far From Home, turn around, go back, come back here once you've watched it. Spoilers from this point on. One of the things I noticed in this film that was a little kind of a little thing was, and not so much in the plot or the story or, you know, the meat of the movie, but I noticed I didn't see the Marvel Studio. I don't know if I just missed it, but I didn't see Marvel Studios logo or mention as I had thought I seen, I had saw in Homecoming.
It happens. It happens. They play a scene first.
Okay.
And then they cut away from that scene with Jake Gyllenhaal showing up to tell Fury and Maria Hill, like, you don't want any part of this. And then it cuts. And then it does the Marvel Studios.
Okay. So it comes up. I just missed it. Maybe while I was eating my salad. I looked down and then looked back up. Yeah, because I did see the Sony stuff in there.
Oh, yeah. Before the film, they did the Sony, and they had the woman there and all that.
All the usual stuff that they put in there. So that was all there. So this film, now with Spider-Man, obviously, overall impression.
Overall, I mean, I gave it 3.5. I didn't like it as much as Homecoming.
Really?
For a Spider-Man film. Yeah. And I get it. You had to tie up a lot of stuff that had happened in Endgame. I did actually really like the rom-com aspects of it.
Yeah.
I felt like it did that better than a lot of
superhero
movies that are marketed as rom-coms. I felt this superhero movie did that aspect better.
They did. Yeah.
I dug Peter. Like I think Tom Holland is, you know, when it all is said and done, he may be most people's favorite Spider-Man.
I think so too. I think he's becoming that quickly. Yeah.
I didn't care for some of the I thought Jake Gyllenhaal was a gem. I thought he was wonderful as a villain.
Perfect for that role, right?
Absolutely, because there are scenes in there where I feel like if you take Gyllenhaal out of it and just his charisma and the way he can hold the camera, I feel like if you put even somebody with 70% of his talent doing the same thing, I just don't think it has the same draw at all.
No, and I'm glad to see him get a break finally in a big comic book movie, because he's had a few times where he was close to getting cast in some pretty big major roles, and he ended up becoming the bridesmaid and not the bride. And of course he was almost Batman. From what I understand, he was second in line to be Batman, and after Ben Affleck, I believe, and then he was also up for Spider-Man at one point years ago.
Yeah, Tobey Maguire days.
And Tobey Maguire was probably for Spider-Man. I think definitely for Spider-Man, Tobey Maguire was the right choice at the time.
Well, and he was the more well known actor as well.
True.
At the time, I think Gyllenhaal had only done like Donnie Darko.
True.
If that.
True. And then, of course, I'm thinking about Jake Gyllenhaal in 2019. Maybe that at that point in time, was it 1990? No, 2000 when that came out?
The first one came out in 2002.
2002. So maybe Jake Gyllenhaal in 2002 was okay for Peter Parker.
Right.
He might have been a good Peter Parker. But yeah, because you're right. It was a much bigger name at the time that he ended up getting that casting. And so, yeah, finally getting and I think I've even heard rumors of him at one point for Superman.
DC rumors in your face.
And I don't know if that was just rumors, but he was definitely in line for those other movies. To see him finally get a big break and a character that you can kind of start from scratch on. Because there was no, for the movie audience, there was no preconceived ideas of what Mysterio needed to be.
No, I mean, he's in the comics, but he's just a visual trickster.
Yeah.
And he's not even like one of the, you know, he's not Green Goblin, he's not Venom.
Yeah.
You know, he's not one of the big heavy hitters for the Spider-Man
villains. No, he's not even probably a top three or four of the villains.
And I mean, I knew they were going to have to do something different in order to, because I knew there was no way he was going to be not a villain eventually in the film.
Right.
Like going into it and the trailer's trying to sell it as he's here to help us and all that. I was like, nah. No.
The only thing I was tricked by, I knew he was eventually going to be a villain, but I didn't know if it was going to be in this movie that he was going to be a villain.
Gotcha.
I thought maybe they would do this movie where he was sort of a good guy or working in a gray area, but still on the side of the good guys mm-hmm. in this movie. And then something was going to turn him over to the dark side, either at the end of the movie as a cliffhanger to turn him against Spider-Man,
right.
or they were going to go ahead and just make this have another villain, and then he was helping, and then something in a future movie was going to turn him.
Right.
So that's what I didn't know, what angle they were going to take on that.
No, but overall, like I thought him and Tom Holland were definitely the best parts of the film.
Yeah.
I did like the sprinkling in of, again, the epilogue stuff, you know, the in memoriam, mm-hmm. all of that. Tony, you know, trusting Peter Parker
mm-hmm.
with, you know, his legacy.
Yeah.
And then I liked, you know, the way they did it. It was not Spider-Man No More like they did with, you know, one of the previous Tobey Maguire Spider-Mans where he doesn't want to be Spider-Man anymore. It's literally, I just got back to life. I just got done being on a planet, and I just want to go on this trip. And
totally understandable.
And he's like, I just want to take a break. Like, it's summer.
He
like,
earned a vacation.
I really like this girl. Yeah. I think she likes me. I just want to be, you know, 16, whatever, 17-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's where he's also a little bit vulnerable as well to persuasion. Yeah. So I thought it was well done without treading on stuff that had been done before.
That had been done so much in Spider-Man. Spider-Man's got that. It's a tricky thing with Spider-Man because it has been, in recent years, it's been done so much in cinema. It was, I mean, rebooted one other time previous and then two films with that. So it was a thing where it was going to be tough. They had to do something a little different, which they have. Where in the case of with Captain America and Iron Man and even Thor, you could start kind of, you didn't have that to worry about that mm-hmm. shadow kind of over you where, well, wow, we've done this before. So yeah. you're able to do that.
And I mean, I'll say they easily could have gone in terms of villain. They could have gone the like Mandarin route with Iron Man 3 and completely,
yeah.
you know, missed the landing with mm-hmm. the villain. But I think they did very well with the villain.
They had a good plan, didn't they? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then then figuring out how they were going to cast it and then tie it in to
the MCU. Yeah.
The MCU, just and perfectly.
Like, what are his motives mm-hmm. and the people around him, what are their motives? And then doing these flashbacks to other movies, and it was done very well.
And this film had Tony Stark's
all over
fingerprints
it.
All over it, which is great. I think that's what had to happen and needed to happen at this point in the timeline, the story, because what had just happened. So I saw what I wanted to see from that in this film. But what's interesting is he becomes built up. His arc is complete in Endgame, where the once selfish kind of tech giant genius, mm-hmm. Sort of very self-involved, the ladies' man becomes, and not completely self-involved. I mean, he's just a lot of what he does is about Stark
himself, Enterprise. Yeah.
Yeah, it's himself, and that's the character. But the arc kind of comes full circle when he sacrifices everything
mm-hmm.
and becomes the real full superhero.
Well, yeah, and I mean, he went from, you know, not caring about where mm-hmm. his stuff went to and
yeah.
what it was doing to people, to wanting to save people,
yeah,
do the right thing, and then not caring about people on a personal level mm-hmm. to eventually letting somebody like Pepper in.
Yeah.
And having a relationship with that, mm-hmm. becoming a father figure mm-hmm. to Peter Parker.
Yeah.
Which is evident mm-hmm. in Peter Parker's grief.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he has, luckily, I was glad to see Happy was a pretty big role. Jon Favreau.
I love that. And that wasn't something I would have necessarily, until I saw it in the trailers, that I was definitely
foreseeing. Even in the trailers, I was like, okay, he's going to be there, but he's not really going to do anything. But he's a pretty integral part of different things that happen.
Well, I feel like he took the place of Tony Stark, and the what his role was in terms of being that mentor and that father figure now.
Yeah,
to,
because Fury is not going to give him that.
No, no, it's not. That would have been a little bit. Fury just would have not made sense. It would have just not fit. And you don't have Chris Evans there, Steven Rogers there, and so yeah, it just makes sense in making him the person, and also the person that bridges the gap in finishing some of the wisdom passed on.
Well, yeah, and they lead. It leads with Mysterio being that mm-hmm. father figure or friend.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, I almost thought when I saw this is that if Robert Downey Jr. had re-upped for another phase of Marvel movies, and they would have maybe spared him at the end of Endgame as a result of him continuing his contract, or they would have killed him off, but then. It was all he didn't really die or what, you know.
Well, I mean, I kind of thought maybe they would have filmed some stuff with him doing like hologram type.
That I was surprised about, that we didn't see that in
yeah,
this film.
Yeah, I thought maybe they would do some like hologram mentorship mm-hmm. with him, like giving some advice that way. Or
I kept waiting for that.
When he gets the glasses, I thought maybe it would be Tony Stark's voice.
Yeah, exactly. I kept waiting for that. And I don't know if that's a contractual thing yeah. because he they would have to pay him and they don't want to, they would have to contract wise. But his pictures are in the movie.
Yeah.
We see him.
Yeah, plenty. Yeah, so I kind of thought maybe they would make him some kind of like his Peter Parker's like Jarvis sort of.
Yeah, I was looking for that and that didn't happen. I don't know if we maybe see the hologram stuff later. That mm-hmm. could be possible. They're saving that for later on. But I had felt if he had re-upped and they had not killed him off in Endgame and they decided to, they would have had to rewrite the ending, that he would have done sort of the similar role that Happy was doing.
Yeah, so
he
would have retired from Iron Man.
He would have retired, but he was still trying to get Peter Parker ready. So he would have been the one to hand the glasses over to him. And he would have been just kind of coming in and out a little bit here and there. But he's got a kid now. He's got a wife. So I felt like they could have made the script apply to Tony Stark if he had re-upped it. And then Happy was there to kind of take over if not. So with this film, what was your biggest... have you already maybe mentioned it as far as your biggest surprise?
I mean, my biggest surprise really was... and it's a minor spoiler because you see the costume all over the place.
Yeah.
But I really didn't think they were going to make the Spider-Man costume like even more Iron Man-ish,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. That was him, like, really, yeah.
Fabricating it. And it's like the tech suit with Homecoming, it was one thing, but it was still mostly like a fabric.
Yeah.
And everything. And it, one of the things I've always liked about Spider-Man, even in the Tobey and Andrew Garfield films, mm-hmm. is. You know, he's got these amazing abilities to dodge bullets and everything. Mm-hmm. But if he does get hit, he's still a man.
Yeah.
And like, but yet he, you know, perseveres through that. Even in Homecoming, when Tony made him wear the sweatsuit again, mm-hmm. and he still went and fought the Vulture in the sweatsuit.
Yeah.
Like, I like that about Spider-Man is it's not about the suit.
Yeah.
And in Homecoming, Tony made a big deal about that. Like, mm. if you think you need the suit to be Spider-Man, then you don't need to wear the suit.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like they leaned a little heavy on the suit, which was surprising to me.
But is that Iron Spidey?
Well, because you had the Iron Spidey in the beginning, but then he gets mm. his new suit, which is also very tech.
Yeah.
You know, because, yeah, I mean, even in the trailers, he's getting shot by bullets, and it's just...
They're incorporating a lot more tech in now into Spider-Man and his suit.
And I understand, you know, we're in 2019 now, mm-hmm. or I guess in the MCU, we're in mm-hmm. 2024.
Yeah.
Because they've got the 5-year jump, so.
I got breaking news for the world right now.
Breaking news up in this place.
There will be a third Spider-Man movie in this franchise.
Oh yeah,
I think everybody knew that, and that's one of those things. This one of the things this film sets up, and we get the end credits scenes are back
mm-hmm.
after one film, and we get two of them. Yeah, which I didn't expect. We got two of them, and pretty juicy.
Oh yeah,
film. These are
both of them.
These aren't just sort of throwaway like comic relief. Like this is not Doctor Strange. Kind of like just having some like funny one-liners or something right. with one of the characters. This is like pretty juicy stuff. It basically sets up Spider-Man 3.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't really set up I don't think it sets up another Avengers movie. I think it's intended to set up more Spider-Man.
More Spider-Man with the first one. And I think that the second after credits is definitely leaning into what's coming in Phase 4.
Yeah, where their focus is going to be shifted towards. So I think, and we see Nick Fury, that he was not actually there. It was one of the
Skrulls from Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
So he was in there. And I kind of wonder, because they're obviously leaning more towards, okay, we're definitely doing more stuff with space now.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of wonder, are they going to try to make the Skrulls villains?
Right.
Or because they didn't say they were holding off on Fantastic Four either.
Yeah.
They said X-Men were holding off for a few years.
Interesting.
So I wonder if that might be a big announcement this month.
Marvel rumors in your face.
Well, Fantastic Four, to me, makes more sense for them to go to that than the X-Men. If that's what they end up doing, that would make sense, because the Fantastic Four, really, they've never gotten it in the movies. There's never been good ones. And with X-Men, you had a really good one until the end. And they laid a few eggs at the end, but they had a really good run.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really hard to follow. And then Wolverine, it's really hard to follow that right away and redo that for the fan base that was really huge fans of that.
I mean, to put it in perspective, like right now, how many people could see somebody else as Wolverine? I mean, it would be like putting somebody else as Iron Man just... You know, in 2021, it would be like them casting a new Iron Man. It'd be weird.
Yeah, I mean, Logan was really close to being, actually considered probably for Oscar nomination.
Yeah.
So it was, how do you follow that up? Unless you decide that you want to use the X-Men and the Wolverine and do something with it in this universe.
Mm-hmm.
That, I don't know if that is possible. Is that possible? Right.
Not with that. I think you have to.
Are they just different? They're just too different.
Yeah, I think you have to start fresh and do something different, because, yeah, especially with the last few, with them going like 60s and 70s and 80s and the 90s.
Yeah,
it just doesn't make sense that the MCU would.
There was no cross.
That. Yeah,
there was no crossover. So either it has to be redone completely, or they would have to. It would have to have been a parallel, like
very secret. Either parallel universe or that it was some kind of secret to where, because how would Nick Fury and all of them not know about mutants existing?
Right.
Like, you would have to make it something new to where it was like, okay, now we're just now discovering these mutants or something.
So speaking of that, with parallel universes, that was alluded to in the trailer. Actually, it was laid out for us in the trailer that Mysterio was setting himself up to be a superhero that came from another, based on the snap.
Yeah, he came from another universe.
Came from another universe.
Earth was destroyed.
Where Earth was destroyed, his Earth, whatever number it was. Now, it turns out that it ends up turning out that he's a fraud.
Yep.
That he's Barnum and Bailey, and they were putting on a big illusion show. That he's a former disgruntled employee of Stark Enterprises.
It turns out, Quentin Beck, spoilers, he basically designed that technology that Tony Stark was using, where it would make you look like you were, or feel like you were actually in a memory or whatever, and he started using that. He got fired, and then so obviously wanted revenge against Tony Stark.
Yeah, and there was other disgruntled employees
that were there. One from Iron Man 1.
Yeah.
Jeff Bridges yelled at.
Oh, it's brilliant how they tied them all in from previous movies. And then, of course, even making it Jake Gyllenhaal in that previous movie backstage at one of the presentations that Tony Stark is doing, and how they worked that in. But also it shows us the time before Tony Stark became a better man and sort of the residual damage it did when he was not the perfect guy himself.
Right.
And he sometimes kind of worked in a shady area. Even though he meant well and good, he sometimes didn't treat everybody around him the best possible way.
Mm-hmm.
And he created
A
lot of enemies. And there was residual damage from that. And then now we see kind of that left. That's something another thing he left Peter Parker with. He left some of the good stuff, but he also left some of his residual damage, which happens in a lot of families when a patriarch passes away. Sometimes they leave some good stuff behind. Sometimes they leave some of their bad dealings, too.
Exactly. And I think that turn was done really well because, like I was saying earlier, like in that bar scene when Peter leaves and then he lets the illusion fall down and then jumps up on the bar and is kind of doing his little thing. I was like, wow, he is really like cranking it up to like absurdity, but it works.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed his performance. I did not think initially once they did the turn where it was like, okay, he's using technology as an illusion.
Right.
But it ended up working for me in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it ended up being that. He wasn't using magic like in the same vein as Doctor Strange.
Yeah, which is in the comics. That's what he does.
He's using magic.
He's like a magician. Mm-hmm. He's using illusions. In this, it's all technology.
So it was a little bit different take. They kind of took some liberties on Mysterio and changed some things for the cinematic storytelling for the storytelling they were trying to do.
And it worked for the better. And one of my few complaints about Homecoming they addressed in this, which was his Peter tingle.
Yeah.
Because in the movies before this, they never allude to him having a spider sense.
Right, which is a big thing. That's a big thing. I mean, the things they want to stay away from with Spider-Man, because it's been done too many times, that's one that you can't really, you gotta have that.
Yeah. So I'm glad they brought that in, and they made it a big thing in the climax. That without that power, that ability, he probably would not be able to, you know, complete his mission.
Was that kind of a, oops, let's go back and fix this?
I think so.
Kind of thing?
But
yeah.
But what I like is they did it a little bit different, you know, whereas in the Maguire and Garfield ones, they kind of did it the same, where it was like hair would stand up, and then it would like zoom in on their face, and then they would do something.
Yeah.
They did it differently in this one.
Were you a Tobey Maguire or Garfield?
I liked Tobey Maguire's Peter Parker outside of Spider-Man 3 better, but I liked Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man because he was quippy and, you know, funny. And
he did in the suit as an actor.
Yeah.
How he was able to.
I just didn't like his Peter Parker, this kind of cool.
It was
like,
too
emo
cool.
Skateboarder kid.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that, you know, once he put the mask on, he became this like wisecracker.
Yeah. Which that was fun. And that worked. Yeah. But the Tom McGuire much more. And then, that's why, you know, Tom Holland,
he's doing that.
He does the awkward, he gets the awkwardness and that lovability that you want with Peter Parker, where you're kind of like, you know.
And then when he puts on the mask, you know, he does crack a few jokes, even to like the police officers.
Yeah, he works it in there, just enough of it to where it's like, because he gets a new confidence when he puts on the suit that he doesn't have off the suit.
Where they're like, yeah, where you been, Spider-Man? He's like, too busy doing your job and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. They made these two. They said they were going to do that with these movies. They were going to make them very much like inspired by 80s rom-com movies with the Spider-Man films.
Yeah, like the first one was like a John Hughes
feel to it. And this one had a little bit of that 80s teenagers on a vacation for the summer kind of feel to it. Like the two guys, you know, we're on a mission. There's something we got to accomplish.
We got to get the girl.
Yeah, we got to get the girl. That's kind of the basis of it. So there's been some grumblings on the web about Ned, who's a fan favorite for these Star Wars movies, for these Spider-Man movies. Ned Leeds, played by Jacob Batalon, if I'm saying his last name correctly. Is he going to become a villain at some point?
Oh, that'd be interesting, especially. They did sprinkle a little bit of jealousy in there once he finds out he's not the only one that knows Peter Spider-Man.
Yeah.
He's kind of like, well, I was the first.
Yes, there was a little bit of that, just a little bit of that.
He was like, you know, I'm still your guy in the chair, right? And that sort of deal.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's been that. Is like, is he maybe going to at some point, the jealousy, and see some kind of, is that going to somehow build up? And is he? And then he had the girlfriend in this movie, and that was going on, the whole relationship. They broke up. But they both took it. I mean, he took it really well. So there wasn't any pain that was absorbed from that. But I don't know. That'd be interesting because there's been some grumblings on the web about Ned. Is Ned going to become a baddie at some point?
Well, and then his girlfriend in the film, Betty Brant, her character eventually becomes a villain, I believe.
Really?
I can't remember if it's Silver Sable or Black Cat, but that character becomes one of those two, which is like an not necessarily a true villain, but kind of like a Catwoman to Spider-Man.
Yeah, where they're working that kind of gray area. They kind of go back and forth. Well, that's what I would, if they decided to make Ned a villain, I think the audience, there'd be a certain portion of the audience, because he's a fan favorite and he is a lovable sidekick. I think there would be a lot of people that would be a little disappointed about it, but it would add some sort of element of surprise and to the movie audience, even though in the comics, I think that character it has in some of the series become a villain.
I'm not as familiar with that character in the comics as I am with, like, Betty Brant, Flash Thompson.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I enjoyed all the characters. I thought Flash Thompson had plenty of little moments in this film as well where he got to shine a little bit.
Yeah, they gave everybody... Everybody has a little bit of a, you know... everybody's really good in it. I mean, there's no doubt about it. If they did make Ned a villain, I would like to see him kind of do what they did with in the Tobey Maguire, where his friend eventually comes back
right
in 3, I believe, to come back over and kind of goes full circle and comes back to being
helping him out.
So that would be sort of what I would see that if they were going to do that. Of course, the problem with that the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man is, of course, was the last movie. They just crammed too many villains in that movie.
Too many villains. And I want to say, you know, it came out a few years after the second one, and the second one was so well regarded. And then the third one, they just shoved too much in there. Gwen Stacy, Venom, Sandman, New Goblin, just way too much stuff. And unfortunately, you know, it did really well for Blockbuster. Money-wise, but just did not do well with critics or audience in terms of how they reacted to it.
And it may have killed the series.
Yeah, because it was a foregone conclusion that there was going to be a Sam Raimi Spider-Man 4, which they had to just shelve it and reboot it.
I saw it as being a 4, a 5, you know, like LeBron James when he went to the Miami Heat. Yeah. Not 1, not 2, not 3. I thought it was going to go on for a while. So this movie, we thought from the trailers that it was opening up the multiverse, Spider-Verse, into the Spider-Verse. Did it in fact not open up the multiverse? Because now we find out that Mysterio was lying.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the fact that we got that second trailer at the end, I think that means we're not going to open it up to multiverses right now. We're just now going to open up to space, because before Infinity War and Endgame, the only time you really saw much of space was Guardians. But now the Guardians have come here and they've been all that
crossover.
So now space, and with Captain Marvel, now we're going cosmic. Essentially,
it's gonna be more cosmic. So that's kind of going the future of the expanded universe. Spider-Man will have his own problems, probably back here on Earth, as it was indicated in one of the end credit scenes. So, all hell's about to break loose for Peter Parker. Yeah,
because I know the past few years I had been hearing hints that they were wanting Spider-Man to take over as one of the leads in. As an Avenger.
He's stepping in the place of Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans and the Captain America and Iron Man, who were the leads in the past.
So before we see another Avengers movie, we'll have that Falcon Winter Soldier show.
Yeah.
So I think they want to give those two as much time as possible to have audiences kind of, you know, get with them a little more, because Chris Evans was so beloved as Captain America.
Right.
It's going to be jarring the first time people see one or both of them as Captain America.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't be surprised if they just kind of take turns. Like, we're both Captain America.
Really? Back and forth. You think they might go that route? Interesting.
I think the show, I hope the show does well, because if the show does well, then people will kind of warm up to them.
Yeah, and then where that can go. Yeah, and right now I kind of see Thor's still going to be around, it looks like, in Guardians of the Galaxy kind of thing. So if they need another team up, if they want to do another team up, he could be brought back in possibly in the future. If they decide to go the new Avengers route, do you see them going that way?
You would have like Spider-Man, Scarlet Witch, Black Panther,
Ant-Man and Wasp,
and I want to say that's it, really.
Well, you could bring
outside of Wolverine was a member of the New Avengers, but you would probably have to bring him in years later.
Like they did with Spider-Man. They didn't have him because Sony was still using him and they weren't willing to loan him out yet. So they would have had to hold off on Spider-Man. So they've done that before. But yeah, you got the new Captain America could be a part of the Hulk. Yeah. Maybe brought in still. If Ruffalo upped for some more movies in the future, they could maybe go that route. Or they might decide to do She-Hulk.
Yeah, She-Hulk.
Is a possibility. So, which was, you know, in the comics too. So that could be a possibility. Maybe Mark Ruffalo is kind of a...
Maybe he's what I thought Robert Downey Jr. might be, where he's just kind of on the side now that he's smart Hulk. You know, he's just the person giving advice and stuff.
And they need that.
Not fighting. He didn't even really seem to want to fight in Endgame anyways.
That's kind of where his arc seemed to have ended in Endgame, is where he kind of... helping with his brains more than with his brawn. So maybe that's kind of how he's going to be used in the future, is he's going to be kind of this smart Hulk, kind of doing some of the things Tony Stark did in the past. And you kind of need that older, wiser voice that Peter Parker can't be yet.
Right.
Even though Peter Parker is a smart kid, he's not ready to be that kind of exactly like what Tony Stark was, and having kind of that experience under his belt. So yes, so you got these different characters you can bring. And Black Panther obviously would be, Captain Planet obviously would be a part of that too. So our Captain Marvel would obviously Captain be Marvel. Captain Marvel, not Captain Planet. Not unless Marvel bought him from from Turner. Guess
Don Cheadle sticking around.
Yeah,
I
haven't heard anything. Leaving. Yeah, I haven't heard that he's leaving. So that could definitely be, you know, continuing on as well. So and there are a few others that we're not even mentioning could be brought in. The Fantastic Four, if they do that. You're definitely in the next phase. There's probably going to be another Spider-Man, Black Panther, another Captain Marvel, and then probably the Black Widow movie. Well,
yeah, she's getting her movie, which will, I'd assume, take place before she was an Avenger.
Yeah, I would think it's a prequel.
Yeah.
Which, like how she became kind of the badass that she is, and like what her struggles were and leading up to, you know, getting to being where she was. So that, yeah, could be an interesting, that could be an interesting story. I could see that being a lot of fun, her origin story of how she got to be where she be and all the things she had to put up with.
Hawkeye's still there.
Hawkeye's there. Yeah. So you've got that as well. So, yeah, so they could go that route, the new Avengers route, and it wouldn't surprise me if they do that in Phase 4, but maybe on the tail end of it. I don't think they would do it right away.
Nah.
So, they, like you said, they have some of the things that they're going to do to kind of test the waters a little bit.
Yeah, because, I mean, foregone conclusion, Black Panther 2 will probably be...
Fairly quickly.
Fairly quick. As Guardians of the Galaxy, you probably won't see until 2021 because he's still working on Suicide Squad.
And if it hadn't been for all that mess was going on with Gunn,
it would have been one of the first ones.
It would have been one of the first ones because that's one of the strongest properties they have.
And then with Thor joining him.
Yeah, would have been a really big pickup where we left off with Endgame in the expanded universe, but obviously that they're had to shuffle the cards a little bit, so that'll be pushed back a little bit. You may get Spider-Man 3 a little sooner than you would have gotten it, kind of in its place.
Like Spider-Man graduation day or something like that.
As the next one, but then all the mess that he's going through that was left off with, now he's been framed, basically.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. But he's been framed, so there's all that he has to deal with now, that he's been framed with the murder of Mysterio,
and whatever, all the damage and stuff caused by the drones,
and that seems like that could have been some stuff that was orchestrated by the character that was this right hand man to Mysterio in this film, and then he takes the downloads all this tech onto a card and then kind of makes a run for it. So maybe he was kind of starting to set up things for his own
villain.
So, what was for you the least surprise in this film?
I would say probably Jake Gyllenhaal as the villain.
Yeah,
like I knew even the early trailers. I was like, I was just trying to think, when's it gonna happen? Mm-hmm. Is it gonna happen at that midway point? Is it gonna happen in the third act? Mm-hmm. I was just like, when is he gonna turn? So I liked the way they did it. I wasn't expecting the way they did it.
No.
Because I was halfway, once they got into it, I was like, okay, they are making him a good guy.
Yeah.
And so I thought maybe something would happen to where he would turn. I didn't think that it was him, like, basically acting.
Do you think we'll see Keaton back? Michael Keaton back?
Oh, yeah.
I think he's coming back at some point. And I had wondered, going into this film, whether we would get a cameo from him. Maybe in the end credits scenes. Yeah.
to me, he's probably top three of all the MCU villains.
Of all time.
In all the 23 films, I think he's top three.
Yeah.
He's up there with, you know, like Loki and Killmonger. Mm-hmm. Killmonger was a good one, but... Yeah, those are really good ones. Hella was good, but yeah, I really like Michael Keaton as the Vulture.
Do you think he comes back maybe working to help Peter Parker this time, or is he coming back because he's...
Well, the thing, too, is he didn't want anybody to know that Peter Parker was Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
because at the end of Homecoming, the Scorpion was trying to get him to tell him.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't... He basically was threatening. He beat him up before he would tell him who Spider-Man was. So now I wonder, now that Mysterio's kind of let that out of the bag, how Vulture feels, because he felt like that was his knowledge to have.
Yeah. So that's interesting to see how that's going to play. And do you think we see him back in 3? That soon?
I don't know about 3, but definitely either 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
And I could definitely see him helping Peter,
mm-hmm.
but not necessarily because he wants to help Peter, mm-hmm. but because he's like, yeah, I want to help you, but it's only because I don't want these people to kill you.
Mm-hmm. I think Tom Holland is the gem of this Marvel franchise right now, with Robert Downey Jr. having been sort of the piece that kind of moved things along, the centerpiece that moved things along. I think Tom Holland has definitely stepped into those shoes quite well, and I've got a lot of confidence just on his shoulders that he's going to kind of carry it through.
Oh yeah,
going into the future.
And I think they played really well with casting someone who looks so young,
mm-hmm.
who can like really grow into that, because you can definitely tell they want him to be Spider-Man for like 10 years.
And I'm excited about that, because that's one of the things that always that's made me mad for over 2 decades, is that we have not gotten to see the older Spider-Man in the movies. We never got in the previous franchises.
The married one. He's married, just trying to make ends meet.
Yeah.
As Spider-Man.
Because there's some stories there of Spider-Man, you know.
Even into the Spider-Verse's Spider-Man, who's been Spider-Man mm-hmm. for like 20-some-odd years, mm-hmm. but now he's divorced because he was Spider-Man and he couldn't balance. That's one of the things I love about Spider-Man and his character, is he's just a regular guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's not rich.
Yeah.
He's just trying to make ends meet on top of being Spider-Man.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Even in Spider-Verse, we got to see that finally in the animation.
And he's living alone in an apartment because he couldn't give up being Spider-Man.
Yeah, and so that's something, so what could they, you know, they were too slow to get to it in live action. They finally got to it in the cartoons and the animation. But yeah, I want to see that. I would like to see them get to married Spider-Man.
Even the Chris Pine Spider-Man that died in the beginning of Spider-Verse, he mm-hmm. was like a 25-year-old, like Spider-Man in his prime.
Mm-hmm.
He was like happily married and everything, and he's Spider-Man.
Yeah, so they're Spider-Man again, and getting to see a little bit of the older Spider-Man and what that's like, and I think now we are going to possibly get that. And this, if Tom Holland sticks around, which what I think is the plan, I think they're hoping that he sticks around for a decade, which he probably will,
mm-hmm.
and do more. I mean, we're probably going to see him in probably another 2 or 3 Spider-Man movie standalones, and then in other people's movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited about that part of it too. Do you think they'll bring in the multiverse into this at some point?
I really don't think so.
Yeah, you don't think they'll do the Miles Morales crossover?
Because I think Sony likes what happened with Spider-Verse, and they've already got a couple sequels planned for that.
And it's so known already. The audience knows that Spider-Man series so well. It got so much praise and critical acclaim.
Yeah, they're going to keep Miles and Spider-Gwen and all that. They're going to keep that in their animated universe.
So the 21 Jump Street guys that did the Into the Spider-Verse?
Mm-hmm.
That was their project, and that was their baby, and they did such a great job on that. And it got came out of nowhere for some people, and it just was a huge success. And now, like I said, that's another franchise for Sony.
Oh, yeah. That's why Sony signed them to an exclusive deal.
Which they should.
So Lord and Miller are basically now in charge of Sony's like animated projects, both TV and movies, involving Spider-Man stuff.
Yeah, so that is going to be amazing, because they're going to go and do these. They're going to do some spinoffs, I'm sure, and then they're going to continue to do the story of Miles Morales. So those guys, the original directors for Solo.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that net does that for you make you wonder what they would have and could have done if they had got to finish that Solo film?
Yeah, it does. But I also understand where Lucasfilm was with their decision, in that they feel like Star Wars needs to be a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not very flexible. Star Wars is not as flexible as, you know, something like comic books. Because comic books, they course correct and like, okay, somebody's not dead anymore. Now this person's dead. Now they're not dead. We bring them back and then we'll say, oh, that never happened because of this. Star Wars, you can't do that.
Well, in Spider-Verse, Into the Spider-Verse, they're also starting from scratch and doing a new Spider-Man arc, a new Spider-Man story in the animated world.
You're not anchored by everything that came before it.
Yeah. So I think it's kind of a double-edged sword. Yeah, we would have loved to have seen what they would have come up with had they finished their film, but it probably also would have been kind of taking some liberties away from what the Star Wars... what you would have expected in Star Wars.
Exactly.
Can you look at that film now, with Ron Howard finished that film, and see what was Lord Miller and what was Ron Howard?
I think a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Ron Howard just shoots so just linear and straight.
Straightforward
and just boom, 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 that I feel like there are some scenes in there that you can tell were maybe a little bit of ad-lib, which was definitely theirs.
More of their stuff. I mean, definitely some of the scenes, how they're more drawn out, kind of is definitely the Ron Howard with the music, and sort of kind of it takes its time to get from point A to point B in certain areas of the film, and that is more of like that old school style of filmmaking.
Yep,
that's from Ron Howard when Ron Howard was going to school to learn movie directing. That's where his inspirations were coming from, were for that type of movie.
Exactly, like classically trained, like this is how you shoot a shot, and then you stay with your actor, and if you cut, you literally cut to either a close or a wide, and you keep it there, and then that's it.
Yeah, and for me, that movie ended up fine. Mm-hmm. It was
fine.
I did not dislike the Solo film.
No, not at all.
And I think for audiences overall, the Solo film, I think most people at least liked it okay.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't have a ton of haters. It was not probably as well received as Rogue One.
No.
So, in this 103rd episode, thoughts and advice, right after this.
Sony, we love you 3000. Dreaming about being an Avenger somehow. Tony would never allow, but now he'd be so proud. I remember when he took me to Leipzig. He told me it's on the down, no playing out. Then New York Bar came to town, and I would not pull out. This ain't fun, no, this ain't right. This Thanos dude knows how to fight. Mr. Stark, I don't feel so good tonight. I'm swinging.
And Johnny Lightfoot can be also found on his podcast.
You can find me every other Wednesday on Matinee Talk. Basically, it's straight talking movies, talking box office, breaking news, stories, reviews, top 10 lists, every other Wednesday.
And you just did your episode where you go back and you reviewed like your movies that you've so far throughout the
year. Our most recent one was basically... best film, worst film, most surprised, most disappointing of the year, basically at the halfway point of the year.
So give us one nugget of that.
Okay, so my one nugget from that was that my most disappointing film of the year so far was Us. The Jordan Peele.
Yeah, and I remember you had alluded to that on this podcast.
And it's not even that it was, you know, bad film. I like the film. Mm-hmm. It's just the expectations were so high after it was coming out of South by Southwest that it just had me thinking it was going to be on another level for me, and it wasn't. It was still a good movie, but not where I wanted it to be.
Yeah. Do you think that puts the pressure on Jordan Peele for his next movie if it was not as maybe well received as his previous work?
I think so, especially since I saw an independent film last month in Overlook Festival that was better than Us and better than most of Jordan Peele's Twilight Zone episodes.
Wow.
And this was an independent film that was filmed in Whitney, Texas in 2016. And it's definitely going to get picked up by a distributor, and it's going to do well.
Wow. Okay. So, yeah. And then, yeah, in the Twilight Zone, too, the series got mixed reviews.
Yeah, mixed reviews. I don't think CBS All Access got the subscribers they wanted.
That they were hoping for, yeah. And they've been leaning heavily towards old properties thus far for their service to get people in. So they started off with the Star Trek sequel series, or prequel series, actually.
Yeah, Discovery.
Yeah, Discovery, which first season, mixed reviews. Second season, I think more people were on board for it. They'd made some changes going into second season. And it got a little bit more of a positive reception, but some people thought the damage had already been done from the first season. Some people thought it was really innovative, what they had done, but a lot of people thought it moved too far away from what they would expect with the timeline with Star Trek. So then Twilight Zone, another old property that they've now rebooted. So they've leaned heavily on those, and I don't know if they brought in a lot of new fresh material so far. You know, there's been NBC's about to launch their own streaming platform now, and I don't know what they'll bring in as far as content for that yet and how strong it'll be. But I had a conspiracy theory the other day. If some of these... If it's a strategic move, because a lot of the, you know, cable cutting happened to a lot of TVs, a lot of homes the last 4 or 5 years.
Absolutely.
And that's directly responsible for that is the success of Netflix and streaming services. So if you're a person that loves the content, like the movies, the television series, the good content coming from streaming service, and you don't necessarily care about live sports that much, do you really need cable TV in 2019? You know, that's the question. Or, you know, a few years ago when Netflix had probably the most content that they've ever had, a few years ago, there was that point where if you really didn't need live sports, you really could cut your cable and go to having maybe Netflix, maybe add in a Hulu or a HBO Go, and you're set as far as content. There's more than enough stuff.
But now, it's tough.
Well, it's becoming fragmented now because so NBC going to start their own streaming platform. They're going to pull all their stuff off of Netflix, going off on their own. CBS, I think, did a similar thing. Disney Plus seems to have done that in what they were doing and taking a lot of their content. Now, I've wondered if there's sort of now not so much. I think the plan for Disney Plus was they really seemed to be really going for it.
Oh yeah.
They're swinging for the fence and they want to be in as many homes as Netflix. They want to be in as many homes as possible. And they're offering some pretty big content wise. They're offering some pretty big things because you're getting all of Disney's library
and Fox.
And now Fox. So that's substantial. They really are, I think, going to give Netflix a run for their money. And that's not to mention maybe some of the other original stuff that they're going to add in there that's not even Marvel or Star Wars centric.
Yeah, I mean, and if I'm Netflix, I need to start developing some more new properties that create the kind of buzz of Stranger Things and Orange is the New Black and stuff, because you need to get some new properties that gain some subscribers that might be leaving with some of these shows, you know, possibly being done.
Yeah, they need some new hits. They need new hits for sure on that level of a Stranger Things and Orange is the New Black. So I've had a conspiracy theory. I don't think this was the intent of Disney Plus, but now that you've got a CBS streaming, you've got an NBC streaming, all these other, you know, and there's some things I'm not even remembering that are also out there. So is this sort of a let's pile on and take the content with us on Netflix and kind of like basically kind of destroyed Netflix from the outside.
Mean, kind of. I mean, DC Universe, they have theirs. And then, so, I mean, Netflix, now you're pretty much on there for originals. Mm-hmm. That's it. And, I mean, luckily, they do churn out good ones. Mm-hmm. A lot of their documentary series are very good.
Yeah.
The TV shows have all been good. Their movies are very hit and miss.
Yeah.
Very hit and miss.
Very hit or miss.
Occasional gem in there. The Perfection Absolutely. Just dropped, which premiered at Fantastic Fest last year. That mm-hmm. movie is a treasure. Still mm-hmm. my favorite film of the year, mm-hmm. and it's on Netflix. So there's plenty of stuff still on Netflix, but now you can't just go on there and browse through and be like, oh, I think I'll watch Guardians of the Galaxy, mm-hmm. or I'll watch Iron Man.
Oh, it was like, was about 3 years ago. You could go on there and you can find
They had all the Star Wars Clone Wars stuff. They had everything.
Yeah.
You know, everything. X-Men animated series. You could watch anything. You just search Netflix. Now I'll be searching. I'm like, man, I really feel like watching this. And then I'll have to Google search. Can I stream this? And then sometimes it'll say Netflix, and then I'll click on it and it'll be like no longer available. And I'll be like, okay.
And like, So now with that happening and then all these others. So I heard a radio show the other day talk about this, and they had suggested that could it come full circle, and 10 years from now, if the other streaming platforms that are taking content back and bringing it into their own house, is that going to fragment it so much that it's going to kill streaming and it's going to go all back to cable?
I don't necessarily think it'll go back to cable, but I think you'll see different companies working together to where you can do streaming bundles.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, instead of paying like $7 for CBS, $7 for, NBC, you could do a bundle and just pay like $10 for both or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing, you have cable packages. Mm-hmm. So maybe you have a streaming package to where and then for the people who only want CBS, you can pay your $8 or $9 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to start, you can basically start picking and choosing,
mm-hmm.
and then they'll have to work together, you know.
But yeah, because for me right now, I mean, there's not enough on CBS Access to get me interested in doing a long-term subscription. Netflix, I'm still around for it for a while. Outside of them and Disney Plus, that's kind of where...
I mean, I do have Amazon Prime, but to be honest,
I forget about
it's almost mostly for the shipping.
Yeah.
I mean, I still go on there every now and then to stream, but it's mostly for the shipping savings.
Yeah. I forget sometimes. I actually look for stuff on there to watch because it is. I do YouTube Premium too. But I use that mostly for the music
and ad-free.
And then Cobra Kai.
Cobra Kai was amazing.
But they're going to go commercial platform. So shows like the few shows they have, like Cobra Kai, the original content they have, is going to, and I think in several months from now, is going to become available to the non-paying audience with commercials.
Okay.
So they're changing kind
more
of...
More like network TV.
Yeah, more like network TV on the internet. It's kind of where they're going with it in the future. All right, agree or disagree for you, Mr. Johnny Lightfoot. Going back to Spider-Man, for number one, we're talking about villains and maybe some of the future villains that they might do in this current Spider-Man franchise. Could we see Green Goblin and or Dr. Octopus brought into the Marvel Cinematic Universe? While there is no definitive answer right now, this is an article that was on MovieWeb. Spider-Man Far From Home director John Watts has weighed in. At this point in time, he seems to think it's best to focus on new villains as opposed to ones that we've seen before. Do you agree or disagree that it's a mistake to ignore the most recognized villains from Spider-Man's history in the comics?
On one hand, I understand what he's saying. You want to get fresh takes on there, especially since the Spider-Man franchises are so condensed within a short period of time. Mm-hmm. Like the Tobey Maguire era ended in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Garfield started in 2012.
Yeah.
And then 4 years later in 2016, you had Tom Holland. So it was literally 5 years between the first and the second, and then another four between the second and the third.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you did any, you'd probably see Doc Ock before Green Goblin.
Because
we haven't had a Doc Ock since 2004 with Spider-Man 2. So we've had 15 years between that. So I think we would see that before. But then again, he's the villain in the Spider-Man PlayStation 4 game. So
yeah,
they use Doc Ock. So I do think they're leaning more towards the new villains because they've already introduced like Scorpion, Vulture, Mysterio, Jared Leto is going to be the vampire in the standalone film. So Morbius, so they're introducing him.
Wow.
So we might see if honestly, I think if his film does well, we would see Morbius crossover into the MCU.
Ooh,
we would see Venom crossover.
That would be good.
Because I think Sony wants to keep because Venom made so much money just with Sony, I don't think they would let him go over to the MCU.
And Jared Leto's so good. I could see him with Tom Holland.
Yeah.
That would be a really good crossover with the two of them. Number two, now getting into the Star Wars talk. We didn't really talk Star Wars much in this episode, a little bit. Star Wars 9, which we now know as The Rise of Skywalker, according to this article, also on MovieWeb, it would have been radically different had the project remained in the hands of Colin Trevorrow. Daisy Ridley, a while back, was out to dinner with a group, and she was joined by Colin Trevorrow. It happened to be that somebody that was in the group with her knew Colin Trevorrow and invited Colin to go along, and they ended up sitting next to each other at this dinner. Awkward. Anyway, and she seemed to express that from her conversation with Colin that the outcome was that she did conclude that his version of The Rise of Skywalker or Episode 9 would have been very different from what they ended up doing with J.J. Abrams. Do you agree or disagree that what we will eventually get is a documentary in the same vein as Jodorowsky's Dune, where we will see Colin Trevorrow, Episode 9, what it would have been in a documentary?
I'll disagree, not for the fact that I wouldn't want to see it, because I would love to see it, but I would disagree in the fact that I don't think Disney would let a documentary like that get made.
They wouldn't allow an authorized one.
Right, no. Oh, see, there would...
Unless they get really desperate for content at Disney+. Yeah, Plus.
I could see an unauthorized one, probably, but if I'm Colin Trevorrow, I don't want to piss off the mouse.
Yeah, it's a big company to piss off. It seemed like if it's going to happen, it's going to happen years from now, like decades from now. And it would happen only the main reason it would happen is if Rise of Skywalker ended up being a disappointment. Then there's going to be larger interest over
what could have been.
Yeah. Do you think are you as curious or even more curious of what Zack Snyder's cut would have been of Justice League?
I mean, I'm very curious, because especially after reading some of what he said was going to be in it, leading into like a next film or a part two. I'd be really interested to go behind the scenes of like him, like while he was developing Justice League, like if there was some behind the scenes on that. I would love to see that stuff, like some storyboards and him talking about like his vision for where the Justice League was heading. I would love to see that.
Did you like Batman versus Superman more than Justice League?
The extended cut, yes.
Yeah.
The ultimate edition of Batman v Superman is actually pretty good with the additional like 30 minutes. It's long, but it explains a lot more.
And that's the one Zack Snyder wanted in theaters, wasn't it?
And they said it was too long.
It was too
3 hours long.
It would have been 3 hours. Well, we just had, I mean, how long was Endgame?
3 hours long.
3 hours long.
But
so
Marvel had just made several billion-dollar movies in a row.
They had the clout to get that into theaters on multiple screens at that point in time. This is number three. Filming has officially started on Bill and Ted's 3, Face the Music.
Whoa.
So there's been some pictures already posted up on the web. One Twitter user by the name of Christopher Ripley, that's a cool name, he tweeted out with a photo of Bill and Ted in the iconic photo booth. And this is now Keanu Reeves and his co-star in the photo booth in 2019. Mm-hmm. So he tweeted out the photo with Bill and Ted in the iconic photo booth. This is what he quoted in his tweet. Do you think Keanu just had a moment of realization, as in he just realized he's actually in some meta world where we all currently believe that Bill and Ted's 3 is a good idea? Do you agree or disagree with Mr. Ripley's about Bill and Ted's 3? Is it a bad idea?
No, I don't think so. I disagree. I think Keanu right now in his career is on fire with the projects he takes.
It's a good time. It's good timing right now for them to do that movie.
Like right now, yeah. I mean, like we had the McConaissance a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Like it's the Keanu, like the Keanu-assance.
It's the Keanu-assance. I mean, he's on the front cover, I think, this week of one of the major magazines. That was just at the grocery store earlier today.
He
just
got a star on the Walk of Fame.
Which is long overdue.
Yeah.
He should have gotten that, I think.
It's the 20th anniversary of The Matrix.
Mm-hmm. Didn't they give the Kardashians a star on the Walk? Like
I don't know, but all I know is Carrie Fisher still doesn't have a star, which is...
Oh, that's a shame. That's a shame that she didn't get to get one when she was alive.
But yeah, and then he just did Toy Story 4.
Yeah, which is another big movie, huge movie.
John Wick is now a just as big a franchise as Bond, I feel like.
Yeah, that's a movie. There's going to be spinoffs. They're talking about a series.
It's going to be on Starz.
Yeah, the hotel.
The Continental Hotel.
It's going to get its own show. And then possible spinoffs later is a possibility. It's a universe. It's a Wickverse.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone's called it anything particular yet. I'd call it Wickverse, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's going to continue on, as we know. And I just read your review on John Wick 3 the other day, maybe yesterday, actually. So I did know kind of your feelings.
Yeah,
on it.
I mean, I wasn't on the same side of the fence as everyone, but it was still a good film. It was fun to watch. Just not as good as the first two, in my opinion.
Were you surprised that Halle Berry was in and out that film as quick as she was? Her character?
No, not at all. And I actually disagreed with a few other people who were wishing she was in it more. And my rebuttal was the movie's called John Wick.
Yeah,
it's about John Wick.
It would have felt too much like a team up.
Yeah,
if it had happened. And imagine my disappointment when I found out it was Halle Bailey, not Halle Berry,
as the Little Mermaid.
Yeah, the Little Mermaid in the live action, because I was really excited about Halle Berry as the mermaid. It's Halle Bailey. Yeah. With my dyslexia, though, I read Halle Berry. So I went...
She's a little old.
Yeah, I thought... I was like, she's a little old for her. They got a little bit different take on it. Maybe they're going to do some, like... CGI stuff.
De-age her.
To de-age her. I mean, she does look great for... I mean, was he 50?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she looks amazing. 50. I mean, anybody would pay good money to look that way at her age. But, I mean, she looks better than most 30-year-olds at her age. But... I mean, yeah, I thought it was a little strange casting, but I was like, okay, I'm glad there's no ageism now in Hollywood. They're willing to give her. So then I was like, oh, Halle Bailey.
Yeah.
Not Halle Berry. So maybe her character is a spinoff?
Maybe. I mean, she's not working a whole lot.
Yeah. So that could be something. She didn't get the Little Mermaid like I thought she did, so she didn't get that job. But and we were talking about, so you're on board with Bill and Ted's 3.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Face the Music.
Yep. 100%.
And they're filming it, so it's on the way. It's coming fast and furious. It's going to be yet another revitalization.
Literally, if you look at anybody on Twitter talking about Keanu Reeves, it's nothing but positive. Like,
he's the man of the hour.
Right now, there was a video that just came out recently where he got a flight got stranded or something.
Yes.
And he like rode the bus with them.
Yeah, that went viral. And he's known for kind of doing things sort of like, doesn't care. He does things kind of on his own way.
Mm-hmm. Even all of the like donations and fundraising, he does it all anonymously and like funnels it to where he doesn't get recognized on purpose.
Wow. Yeah, which is very rare in the business, where a lot of people strategically try to make it look like they didn't want to get discovered that they did it, but then they actually try to make sure they do get discovered having done a good deed. So for him to do that, what he does, and he's known to, he rides the subway in New York,
gives up his seat if somebody's standing.
Absolutely. Has been seen doing that many times. And it's like that period where McConaughey had that year. He did True Detective. He had won an Emmy for Best Actor for TV.
Got the Oscar.
got the Oscar within the same year for Dallas Buyers Club, which, you know, I've always said that if you are looking for your time with the Oscar, you can't go wrong doing something to alter your appearance, mm-hmm. whether it's losing extreme amount of weight or gaining extreme amount of weight. That's usually or making yourself look like really old. Like, that's a fast track to an Oscar nomination. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's worked for so many times for so many other actors to go Plain Jane, mm-hmm. the Plain Jane approach. So yeah, he gets the Oscar for that. And then in that same year, he has another big movie. So anyway, he had that one year where it was just like everything he touched turned to gold. And then, you know, on
ever since he's done well.
Yeah, I mean, nothing like that year.
No,
in terms of
I mean, that year alone got him out of doing like just romantic comedy.
He was doing these rom-coms and had a couple of, you know, he was in Tropic Thunder in that one part with an ensemble cast, mm-hmm. that was really funny. There was a little bit of a different, you know, movie for him. But since his days with Linklater, he had started to get into these kind of mainstream rom-com movies, and you could get into that wormhole, and that's a wormhole that you can end up, you know, next thing you know, you're like Dennis Quaid, mm-hmm. doing sort of these kind of Disney movies.
Yeah, but he got out of it, and then he did like Lincoln Lawyer and Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh yeah, Wolf of Wall Street. It was the other one I was trying to think. There was even talk at one point of doing a spinoff with his character, and I don't know if that's still a possibility or not. But his character was a small role in the movie, mm-hmm. but a very popular role he played in that character, that movie, mm-hmm. and the scenes that became kind of iconic.
Yeah,
you know, the motivational speech, mm-hmm. and stuff. That actually might have even been my favorite thing he did that year.
Oh, yeah.
Like in the True Detective being my favorite, probably one of my top 10 favorite TV series, the first season of True Detective, one of my top 10 favorite TV shows of all time. I don't know where it falls in that top 10, but it's in the top.
There.
Yeah, it's there for me. You would agree.
Yeah.
And then Dallas Buyers Club, wonderful movie, but his part in Wolf of Wall Street for me is the one that I keep going back to. That one for me was vintage McConaughey. Mm-hmm. Hey, you. Hey, hey, loved his turn in that movie. So for the thoughts and advice for this 103rd episode of the Thunderpop Podcast, speaking of Netflix, we were talking about Netflix earlier. Netflix to cut back on smoking after Stranger Things criticism. So Netflix has, this is via CNN website. Netflix has promised to curb depictions of smoking in new programs following a report that pointed a finger at its hit series Stranger Things, who just rolled out their third season this weekend. So anyway, Stranger Things, whose first two seasons featured tobacco in every episode, going forward, all new projects that we commission with ratings of TV-14 or below for series of PG-13 or below for films will be smoking and e-cigarette free, unless it's for reasons of historical or factual accuracy. So here's my thing. I don't know. For me, in the 80s, a lot of people smoke cigarettes.
A lot of people.
So for me, that does apply to historical accuracy. So I hope what they don't mean is we're going to take it out of like future shows that are set in the 70s or 80s, because it's not enough of a historical depiction for them to keep it in there. Because if they do that, they're rewriting history for kids in the future watching these shows and movies. Because, I mean, they used to turn on the Tonight Show. There's old clips on YouTube, but you can turn on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, and he was smoking a cigarette on the show while interviewing people. Mm-hmm. There were ashtrays and smoke and all these talk shows in the 70s and on into the early mid 80s. You could turn on a TV talk show and you saw cigarette smoke.
Yeah. I mean, growing up, every restaurant, every hotel, there was a smoking and a non-smoking section. Mm-hmm. And everywhere there was ashtrays, everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's just what people did, because it wasn't well known publicly, or it wasn't displayed publicly, the stuff with cigarettes. And honestly, I think it adds to the accuracy of Stranger Things being set in the 80s.
Yeah.
That, yeah, I understand there's a lot of Coke product placement. There's, you know, all of these different product placement. But guess what? In the 80s, we did not have the same sort of laws and rules against product placement. Like, all the cartoons in the 80s were made to sell things.
Absolutely. It was all over the place. That was a big thing. You know, you had the Superman movies with Christopher Reeves, and you'd had the big Coca-Cola billboard in the background. Product placement was a big thing in the 80s in movies. It had become a big thing for a long time. So putting that into Stranger Things kind of makes it feel more authentic. Mm-hmm. I think you could even use it on a show like Glow, and it would feel authentic in that setting as well. So I think that, I mean, as far as things set in the modern time, in the present, I think it's just trying to be realistic to what you're trying to depict. So I think that if you're trying to depict a street gang, and a street gang that happens to smoke a lot of cigarettes or whatever, then yeah, you've got to put that in there. I don't want a street gang that drinks wheatgrass and smoothies. I don't know if that would be accurate. Or if you're trying to depict a Russian mob, or if you're trying to depict high school kids, whatever is accurate. I mean, you do the research. If that group in 2019 is smoking cigarettes, I think it's just putting a accurate depiction. It's proper storytelling. Now, I don't think glorifying something beyond where it actually is real, I don't think you should do that. But I mean, I think that, I mean, I did agree, you know, when they took cigarettes out of magazines, the advertisements off television, that to me, makes perfect sense. Years ago, and we were talking about Don Johnson earlier, when he was on Miami Vice, there was a National Cancer Society was having a big conference, and they invited his co-star, Philip Michael Thomas, to be a spokesperson at the conference. But they didn't invite Don Johnson because Don Johnson smoked on the show. And I think he smoked in real life. I think it was just also part of his character, but also, and it kind of went with his character. It kind of fit the show in the 80s to have Sonny Crockett smoking cigarettes. But the show was so popular with pop culture and kids, teenagers especially, that they just didn't invite Don Johnson because they were like, well, he's an image of smoking. It just wouldn't be appropriate. So apparently he was so like butthurt by not getting invited and his co-star getting invited that he actually quit smoking. And so then future episodes, if you watch later episodes of Miami Vice, suddenly Sonny Crockett is not smoking on the show anymore. That to me, that's completely fine because that was a choice of one of the individuals on the show. There were still other characters smoking around him, but I think an individual person, you know, my dad, he quit smoking in the late 80s. He was in Vietnam. He was in the military. He started smoking cigarettes when he was in the Air Force. That's a thing a lot of people did when they would join the services. They would get tattoos and they'd start smoking cigarettes. So he did that. And like Don Johnson, he had some health problems with smoking. He quit smoking. He's never gone back to it. So I think that's a realistic thing. You can have that as a part of a character's story arc. Mm-hmm. So if you have an individual, so I think what they should do with a show like Stranger Things, I think it's cool they want to have a character have some health issues as a result of the smoking, and then show that in the show and make that kind of a subplot. David Harbour's character.
Chief Harper. Hopper.
Maybe he starts having health issues. Like my dad, you know, my dad got pneumonia. He got sick one summer really bad. He was bedridden for several days. He had to quit smoking. He quit smoking, and then he started feeling better because he couldn't smoke while he had pneumonia. So he had several days of fasting from cigarettes. So when he got better, he said, this is a good time for me to try to quit. I was probably sick, really sick. Cigarettes didn't help. So it's ironic that I'm starting to cough while I'm talking about this. So if they wanted to make that like a subplot where David Harbour's character maybe gets pneumonia, gets really sick, they tell him, you need to quit these cigarettes. The doctor tells him. Man, what a ironic parallel. And I'm coughing. But anyway, it's probably the secondhand smoke that I breathed in for a number of years. I used to live in these apartments. The neighbor next door to me smoked, and it went through the vents.
Ugh.
Yeah, I had to finally move. I tried everything, but finally I had to move. And I like that apartment. I love that place. I didn't want to move. It was a great location in town. But anyway, yeah, long story short is I think that they could work it into the story about an individual character's arc. That would be great. To show kids, hey, smoking's bad. This is in the storyline. We're showing you what happens in real life. This happened to real people in the 80s. that the information wasn't as in front of them as it is now about cigarettes, but trying to suddenly just erase it,
right?
That doesn't to me, make sense. Doesn't make sense. I don't. So I hope they don't do that on these shows like they were set in the '70s or eighties, and if it's realistic to a storyline they're telling, even about now, I don't think they should take it out. You know, it's just I don't know. It just it's very reactionary, but I just don't. I just I'm not in love with it. Mm-hmm. Johnny Lightfoot, thank you, sir, for
Thanks
joining
for
me,
having me
for the 103rd episode, and everybody. Have a great hour, day, month, millisecond, and a good July. Peace out.
Later.
And Thunder Pop is a Hit the Bricks production.